Hey there, welcome to this week's message from Real Life Ministries. We are so glad that you're here. We hope that this message will encourage and inspire you to walk closer with Jesus. Now sit back, relax, and let's dive into the Word together.
Week eight of eight in our Paradox series. Again, we're talking about the persecuted today, what it means to be blessed. And so if you've missed any part of the series that we've done over the summer, again, you can find it on our website. You can find it on our app. Each one is kind of a standalone, but they build together. Last week, we talked about this concept of being a peacemaker and what does it look like to be a person that strives for restoration. This idea of shalom is a restorative well-being. The fullness of bringing together is what God says. Something that was once one divided to be restored again. That a peacemaker is one that strives for reconciliation. And that as we choose to do that, we are described and we get to be experiencing what it means to be the children of God, is what Jesus says. And so after that statement, which is going to lead us to this week, which is the end of the Beatitudes, but just the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, we get to see what Jesus has to say about persecution, about who and how and why and what for, if you will. And this is kind of the transitionary piece between what Jesus has brought to us for the first 6, 7, 8 statements so far. So it's kind of like the therefore statement, because of and when we choose to walk through the first part of the Beatitudes, this is kind of our expectation of what it's going to look like. And then, because I like to make things as practical as possible, we're going to talk about again, what persecution is and what Jesus means by it. We're going to look at some definitions. And then we're going to look at what persecution is not so that we can distinguish in our life, am I really being persecuted or is that something completely different? Do I think and see how God wants me to see and act or maybe am I perceiving things differently? So as always, there's a bit of a paradox in some of these statements and I hope that we will see through that and see the truth that God has for us. But we are going to look at 10 through 12, Matthew 5. Verses 10 through 12, but we're going to read it all because we can, and I think we should. So Matthew chapter 5, 1 through 12, talking about the Beatitudes. Verse 1 says, "And Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountainside, he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Which gets us to this week. "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs will be, or theirs is, the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way that they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And so Jesus is rounding out his Beatitudes here. He's talking about persecution. Let's go through it one more time. I'm going to highlight a couple words here before we take it apart, and then we'll rebuild it again together. So Jesus says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness." So there is a "because of" there in his statement. We see that? It's not people are persecuted for any reason. Now that can be an observation. But what Jesus is speaking specifically to is persecution that comes because of what? Because of righteousness. He goes on further and he says, "Blessed are you when you're insulted and persecuted and false and evil are said about you because of" who? Jesus. So persecution for righteousness' sake, persecution for Jesus' sake, and if you read verse 12 there, he's going to say that persecution came about for the prophets who came before you were because of their proclamation of both of those things. What is true and what is right, the sharing of the gospel message, the implications of God's will, a speaking, a sharing, a delivering of those truths is what brings about persecution. at least in this context. Have you ever experienced persecution for different reasons? Yeah, absolutely. Persecution is just the reception, right, of opposition from another person. And we'll look at the definitions here. But what Jesus is not talking about is persecution that doesn't come from him, that doesn't result from righteousness' sake, that doesn't result of furthering the kingdom. That's not what he's talking about. So because he's not speaking about that, we're going to try to pull that apart of our conversation for today, right? And we're going to pull it apart by including it, which sounds weird. But what my hope is that as we talk through this, we'll be able to recognize circumstances, relationships, or situations in our lives to where we may be attributing persecution for being a Christian, and that's absolutely not true, right? Absolutely not true. And then we can go, here's the instances in which that is true, or are there instances in which that is true? What do I do with that? So we're going to start with some definitions. I like words. I think they matter. It's helpful to kind of gain some different insight as we look into it. And so the actual word here for persecution, or persecuted in the Greek, which is our New Testament language, is the word dioko. And that is defined in a couple different ways, but holistically is to make someone run or flee, to put someone to flight. I don't think that means throw them in the air. It could be. To drive someone away, to run quickly to catch something or someone, to run after someone or something, or to harass someone in any way. So that's the fullness of our definition. And what I think is interesting in this series, thematically, and also in this definition, is there tends to be a bit of a positive and a negative component to this definition. So the negative, or what I would think first off when it means persecuted, is to put someone into flight, right? Or to make them run or flee, right? Or to harass someone. Those are like, yeah, I mean, persecution, to persecute, that makes sense. But then there's also the benign descriptions of to just chase after. You see that in there? It's just to chase after. If you're like me, it's like, well, to do harm. Well, not necessarily. I think that's an implication that we put on the word. We're just trying to grasp the intent of the word that we can understand Jesus' implication. So to run after something or to run after someone isn't always for the negative connotation. Just an interesting idea. If we further break that word down, there's root words that motivate our Greek language here. And so the composition of that word dioko comes from a few different words. Number one being the word dio, which is a root word for cause or a reason why. So like because of, if you will. And then the rest of these two words makes up our persecuted word. This is wildly fascinating, I think, which is why I'm sharing it. I hope you think it is too. The word delios is the word timid, faithless, or fearful, which is interesting. Combined with the word diakonos. Has anybody heard the word diakonos before? Maybe if you've been around kind of some church groups or maybe on a team before, the word diakonos is the word in Greek that we get the word deacon from. And so the definition of diakonos is the word or is the description of one who executes the commands of another through service, being a servant, an attendant, or a minister, or a deacon, but especially so from that of a master. And so it's a servant. They're choosing to give, choosing to serve, choosing to minister, which is the concept of deacon when you put that into context. And when you put those two words together is where we get this concept of persecution, which I think is incredible. So if the dio setup is the cause and the action is serving or ministering or putting action to, which is from something that is a master, I'm serving for a cause. When we think of deacon in the church, who's the master that's being served? God, hopefully. Jesus, right? We're serving and ministering and helping underneath the commands or the direction of our master, which is Jesus. But what is the word that's connected to diakonos in this word? It's the word fear and timidity in a person that is in a position of faithlessness. So the causative foundation, which gets us to the word to persecute, could actually be described as a person that is serving their fear, that the master that is motivating them to persecute, to cause another to run, to push someone to flee away, is an action that is caused from me having to serve my fear, which I think is incredibly interesting as we start to put the pieces into play. And so the reason why I'm starting here is because I'm hoping that we can look into the rest of this message and be mindful of the fact is the cause and the motivation as to why people persecute others. Why are people persecuting Jesus? Why do people persecute believers? Why do people persecute one another? Well, without the specific description, I think the foundational principle from the language itself is that a person is motivated by their captivity to fear to respond in such a way that drives others away. They're serving that fear. Their actions are based in brokenness and in faithlessness, which I think is just massively important when we find ourselves in persecution. Now, how does the application of fear play out in our lives? Oh my gosh, there's so many different ways, right? It can be antagonistic, it could be lying, it could be physical, unfortunately, it could be anger, it can be all sorts of displays of actions, but the motivating factor is a factor of fear. So the word persecute actually has some significant depth to it. So when we read what Jesus says to say those that are hungry and thirsty for righteousness, or those that are striving after righteousness, should have an expectation that the response from people will be persecution. The reason behind that persecution is that they're in a position of brokenness and fear. And when you put those two things together, the application or the offering of righteousness, wellness and wholeness, and that what is right between God and people into a person's life that is operating or that are being suppressed by fear is that that response is negative. And it is persecuting, and it's chasing after to push away, to cause that reality to flee. So we're just going to kind of hold on to that as we walk through the rest of this. We talk about what persecution is. If you jump to our Hebrew word, the word radaf is a same word for righteousness, or excuse me, it's the same word to pursue or to persecute. The actual definition is that, to follow after, to be behind, to pursue or to persecute, and to run after. And so if we move and we talk about righteousness, the word righteousness is the word tzedek. Again, justice and right. And then diak, I'm going to say this, I got to go slow here, okay? Dikaiosune. Pretty good, I think. Maybe not. Is the same Greek word for this idea of righteousness. Just, equitable, right? To meet, or as it should be, wholeness and wellness. And so we see there's two major words, right? Righteousness and persecution is what Jesus is talking about as we look through it. Now, as we're going to push ahead here before we talk about breaking this down, I want to point out that oftentimes throughout the Bible, there's concepts and truths and themes that God has presented to us from the very beginning in creation that work throughout the story and the narrative of God, all the way in and to and through the New Testament. And so when we see this verse, and many of the other ones were there too, where Jesus says that those that pursue righteousness, right, what God says is truth between God and people, that as they do that, there shall be persecution, but they will inherit or take place in the kingdom of heaven, right? The space and the provision of God is something that is inherited and experienced now and fully in eternity for those that are blessed, that are about God's business. That's kind of what he's saying here in this last beatitude. Well, if you jump back, I think, to a reference in Deuteronomy chapter 16 and 20, this is what God's saying early on in the story, which Jesus is alluding to. So verse 20 of chapter 16 says, follow justice and justice alone so that you may live and possess the land the Lord your God has given you. So that word, both of those Hebrew words there, follow, right, or to persecute, to pursue, to run after is the word radaf. That's what it means to follow in verse 20. And tzedek in tzedek, or righteousness in righteousness, to follow and chase after justice. Justice and righteousness are synonymous. He's saying the same thing that God has invited us into even in the very beginning. It's not a new concept and a new idea that Jesus is talking about. It's the same age-old truth in the specific application of Jesus' context, which he then offers for us to make applicable in our context. And when we choose to seek after what is right and what is just, when we follow it, when we hunger and thirst for justice or righteousness, then we will experience the place and the provision of God. God, in the story of the Israelites right there, says, I have a promised land and a place for you. A people where you will learn to be my own, and it'll come with an abundance. But you're right now going through hardship. And that's the context of where that message was given. But there's hope. And as you pursue what is good and right, there will be pushback. There will be persecution. There will be antagonism from what you're doing. But remember and have hope in the promises that I give to you. And as you do that, to be a people of faith and perseverance, you will experience the blessing of God, the blessing of the promised land in the Old Testament, the blessing of the application of the kingdom of heaven now and that which is to come. There's always truth in theme throughout the Bible from the beginning to the end. And God is inviting us to see his character and who he is and how he's worked in the history of all of creation so that we can be people that are image bearers of who he is. So that Matthew-Deuteronomy connection I think is really cool. It's literally about the exact same language in the same statement that Jesus is making. Just to make the absolute point here, 2 Timothy 3:12 makes this last comment on persecution, and then we're going to pull some things apart here this morning. Paul says in 2 Timothy 3:12, he says, indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. It says, while evil people and imposters will go on from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. So even in Jesus' invitation of the last beatitude, he says, those that desire to be, that seek after, that embody and want to live out a life of righteousness and justice, those that want to live a godly life should have an expectation to have persecution. Kind of see that time and time again. Now here's something to help me at least understand that. I can choose not to pursue a godly life. I cannot want justice and righteousness. I cannot embody that. I cannot have faith to be a person that is used by God, to believe that that's good, to where life is found, that blessing comes from walking a life that God invites us. I can choose not to do that, can't I? And so can you. So you can choose to run away from persecution if you want. You can choose to be a person that is not willing to bring truth into a lost world. You can choose to be a person that is not going to pursue righteousness, but maybe selfishness or my own kingdom and my own self. And Jesus doesn't say that you're going to endure persecution that way. I think you're going to run into a whole lot of other trouble choosing to make that decision. I surely do when I reject what God invites me into and I don't trust him. I create all sorts of problems for myself. But what it's not is the persecution that Jesus is talking about. And so we can avoid godly living, we can avoid righteousness, we can run and we can do whatever, and we can do that to avoid persecution. And we may avoid it, but I think we will also avoid the abundant, joy-filled life that Jesus offers. We also will avoid being on mission, the ministry of reconciliation, to see relationships restored and hope in people, in marriages mended and life given. We can avoid that too if we operate in fear to avoid opposition. You seen that in there? You get a choice to make. We get to make choices every day, don't you? I've made a lot of choices in my life. I still hopefully get to make more as long as I'm around. Hopefully I learn from the decisions that I make and the choices that I make that are not great, that aren't helpful, that aren't loving, that aren't God-honoring, so that I can make wiser decisions moving ahead. I hope that you would consider your decisions of your life and operate in wisdom, but you still get the choice, as long as you're alive with every breath that you take, to choose to trust and have faith in what God says is true. The invitation to find life abundantly, to be blessed, and to hunger and thirst after righteousness, you can choose to make that decision. And you can also choose the opposite, like the far opposite of what Paul is even putting here. While some people will choose to pursue a godly life and receive some persecution in the midst, well, others are going to be evil and imposters that are going to go bad to what? Even worse. And that in their deception, they will go on even being more deceived and deceiving others. We get choices to make. Now, the reality of creation is that God allows that choice, does he not? God has made a creation that is unbelievable in nature and in the world that we live in humanity, in relationships. God has put the image of God in everything he's created, and he's made it in such a way to where choice exists. God is God of love. The word says that God is love. But love cannot be experienced, and love cannot occur in our lives unless choice is an option. The choice of reciprocation. Love is a seat of the will decision to where we make choices of sacrifice and of surrender and of help and of love and grace and mercy. But we get to choose that. We also get to choose the opposite of that. So Jesus says that there will be persecution for those that choose righteousness for his name's sake, but that we will be blessed in it. The promises of God are still with us. God doesn't promise us to avoid it, but he does promise to be with us in it. He promises to be for us. He promises to go before us, that we would trust him and move and live in faith and not operate out of fear. So let's talk a little bit more about this. Let's pull some of these pieces apart. Let's make some observations. So if we go back to verse 10, Matthew chapter 5, he says again that blessed are you who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, say false things about you, lie about you, chase you off, sue you and try to take advantage of you and speak ill about you, right? To promote themselves by hurting you and on and on and on and on and on, all sorts of persecution. But in the context of what Jesus is talking about, who is it that does the persecuting? It's other people, right? People are the persecutors in this context. Now, we're not talking about all the different ways in which persecution can happen and the difference between persecution and inconvenience and persecution and mockery and persecution and just being flat out rude and mean to somebody. We're not going to go down the list, talk about every single one of those. We are going to focus on what persecution is. And at least in this context, Jesus says that persecution comes from people. People are the persecutors. I think it's important for us to understand that. We're going to talk a bit of, in a minute, what persecution is not, so that we can separate the environments that we live in. And we can operate with wisdom. So persecution comes from people. If we dig deep into our definition, we would say that it comes from people that are broken, that are living in fear, that are rejecting that which is actually good and true. So people are the ones that persecute us. How do they persecute us? Well, this is just a little teeny tiny list right here where they're going to speak falsely and illly and have motivations that are to run you off and make you leave. So if people are the persecutors, according to Jesus, why does persecution take place? Or what is he speaking about in persecution in this context? It's persecution for those who pursue righteousness, right? Like we said before, those who are speaking the truth, regardless of the circumstance, like the prophets that came before, and those that are living a life for the sake of Jesus, Jesus's way, his mission, his methodology, to be loving and gracious and to have self-control and to be temperate and to be generous on all occasions, and to give and consider others better than ourselves, to be willing to walk an extra mile, to embody Christ's likeness is what it is that brings upon persecution. That results in blessing. So it's people, and in the process is through being Christ-like, being about the kingdom. So if that's true, let's talk about what it's not. Let's talk about what isn't persecution. You know what's not persecution? Bad weather. It's 105 degrees out. Oh, so hot and being persecuted because I'm a Christian. I don't think bad weather is persecution. I don't think bad traffic is persecution. So many people here. It's just so hard to be a Christian. God, such a massive inconvenience. So that's not persecution, is it? No, those are inconveniences. Those are random frustrations, right? It's not persecution when you eat bad food, right? You forget to cook your chicken all the way or you eat at that amazing taco stand that I'll still probably go back to, right? It's not persecution when you're in the bathroom for 2 days. Although it feels like it, it's not, right? So those are inconveniences. Those are troublesome situations. Those are things in life that are part of the freedom of God's creation. But that's not persecution from a person towards you because of the opposition of the gospel that you're living out. So different, isn't it? Persecution is not when you have a bad attitude and you treat people poorly and you assume the worst and you pick fear over faith and you're rude and selfish and divisive and choose to be right over choose to love people, or you care more about yourself than you do others, or more about money than a person, or any opposite invitation that God gives us. When we live and act that out, the response of that from people towards you is not persecution, right? Those are called consequences for the way that you act in the things that you say, in the motivation of your heart. And I'm trying to strike straight today because I'm a person that can make up persecution that's not actually there. And instead, I need to be a person in love that's challenged by others in the church to say, hey, listen, you're not being persecuted for being a Christian. You're just getting the consequences of the decisions of the actions that you take. Because the way that you're acting and the attitude that you have and the decisions that you're making, lack of planning or being unwilling and unmotivated or literally to reject and be in opposition of what God says is good for us is not being persecuted. That's us making decisions to not walk the path, to not trust in God. Those are not the same thing. Are you hearing me today? The reason why I want to share this is because if we're going to be people that are gospel deliverers to others, to be peacemakers, we got to know the difference, right? And I'm a person that wants to be ultra honest and practical all the time. Like, I'm very cynical by my core, but I'm changing. Like, Christ changes me. Like, it's really easy for me to get super off track when we mess it up, the presentation we give before other people about who our God is and about how he works in our lives and about how we experience him. And so I want to do everything I can. I need the help of the church. I need people in my relationships and my small groups to help me be accountable to what truth is. And oftentimes, I can put on display a God that's not really the God that we love and serve. Now, we're going to mess it up all the time, aren't we? And that's not the point, is to be perfect. But what the point is to be able to strive and aspire to the truth that God is offering us, that we can rally around those truths together to love each other and spur each other on towards love and good deeds, to continue to persevere through the lives that we live. But man, we got to fight to speak truth and love to each other. And sometimes I need somebody to go, hey, man, that's not persecution and that's not the hard Christian life. Those are just the decisions that you're making. How can I help you not make those decisions anymore? Right? Now, here's what I'm not also saying. I'm not saying that you're not going to go through hardship. I'm not saying you're not going to go through difficulty. I'm not going to say that there's accidents and tragedies. Those things are a part of creation that God has created. Some of it is because of the choice of others. Right? We just talked about that. Other people make decisions that hurt themselves and hurt other people. And sometimes we're just the recipients of that reality. Sometimes it's just the straight fact of the creation that God has made, which is unbelievable and amazing, that he's invited us to be stewards of, to be people that are creative and show who the love and truth of God is. But God made some things that aren't that safe, like sharks and grizzly bears and gravity and skydiving and cars and kids and all the things, right? And I'm joking, but I'm not. I think this is really important. Right, God created an unbelievable creation that has freedom within its limits, right? Sometimes, because of the freedom of God's unbelievable creation, things happen. People make mistakes. Accidents happen. People fall down. They get hurt, right? The way in which God has invited and intended things to be are not currently in that state. They'll get to be there someday, but we catch glimpses of the kingdom now. Right? There is wholeness and wellness, but there's also brokenness in the vehicle that God has created. So just because something bad happens doesn't mean that you're being persecuted for Christ's sake. Does that make sense? It's not persecution when somebody doesn't pick you to be on their team, right? It's not persecution when a public non-believing company puts a picture on their coffee cup that has nothing to do with anything besides them trying to make money. And they may be mocking your faith, but they're not intentionally through relationship persecuting you. Okay? There's lots of different things. There's lots of people in the world. They make music and they make companies and they make stuff. They're not running you down by their business to try to get you. They don't care anything. Actually, it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with what? The actual brokenness and disposition of their heart of them trying to obtain and find life in any other way than the way that they're actually going to get it. And so a people-to-people persecution for the sake of bringing restoration to creation is what God is saying is going to be persecuted. Now, all those things are kind of connected in one way or another, right? Institutions and corporations and governments and all sort of this stuff is motivated and driven by humans, is it not? It is. And there's intent that caused those things. But for the sake of our conversation, let's make sure we start in the position of going, a person-to-person relationship is usually where I'm going to experience this type of persecution. Now, here's a couple things I want to say again about the motivation of people, right? We see even a touch in our definition again that fear can be the root cause to cause people to do certain things in a certain way. But the Bible tells us that our war and our battle is not that against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual forces and the enemies in the heavenly realms. And so the motivation that somebody is working through when they may be persecuting and attacking you is actually a spiritual battle, that they're fighting to understand what truth is, that they're trying to be a person that is working out the disposition that they're in, which is why the ministry of reconciliation is a rescue mission. It's to reconcile that which once was together, creation from God in the beginning, to be restored into right relationship with God, peacemaking. It's a rescue mission. It's a reconciliation mission, which means that we should have an expectation that when we bring ourselves as peacemakers and gospel bearers into a community or a relationship or a situation to where somebody's not walking with the Lord, whether they don't know him or they're in a hard situation, that there's going to be animosity and opposition there. That's what Jesus is saying. That when you are a cross bearer and a gospel bringer, that you should expect that sometimes when you bring light into the darkness, how is it received? Like, not well. Like, don't shoot the messenger, right? And sometimes Jesus is saying, you're going to get shot at. And it's going to be hard. But I think it's worth it. And then we get to see the model of our own Jesus. To where Christ himself, God himself, embodied flesh and came into the creation that he built. Because you are worth it. And how was he received? When he, the Prince of Peace and the King of Kings and the gospel-bearing, love, grace, merciful God himself, came into creation to bring freedom and life and restoration. The righteousness one himself came into your life and the lives of humanity. And how was he received? A little bit of persecution, maybe? They speak ill lies about him and condemn him and falsely accuse him and physically actually persecute him to the point of death? Yeah. And what Jesus tells us should be the hope that we have, that it was the hope set before him in which he endured the cross. For the hope of peace and restoration was absolutely worth it for your sake. And that, again, he's saying it to us, I think it's worth it for their sake. That you would be a people that would take this message to them and just have the right expectation that you might get some pushback. But at the same time, let's not make stuff up that's hard for us that's not persecution, right? Let's pull those apart. And this morning, you may need to be a person that goes, man, I sure make a lot of excuses, right? Whether it's bad decisions or bad food or bad weather or, right, a bad attitude. Or maybe you just this morning are realizing that maybe you're a person that just has what Jesus calls bad eyes. Meaning you're always looking for the problem. You're always looking for the excuse. You're always looking for their fault. You're always looking for the shoe to drop, right? That's a person that is constantly looking towards the brokenness and the problems without the ability to bring wholeness and restoration to it. Are you a person that's always looking for trouble? You kind of need to talk about that, right? This guy is always looking for trouble. Always looking for a fight. Like, are you a person that is bringing upon persecution that is not because of the gospel? Just because you're always looking for a fight? Are you always trying to fix everybody else? Are you always trying to get what's right or yours? I mean, you get it, right? Here's this whole list of things. You can experience hardship and persecution for all the wrong reasons. Maybe today you're a person that's like, man, persecution's hard. You're right. Perseverance is difficult. It is. But Jesus says that in that you'll find hope and you'll find life. And they'll be blessed if you would be willing to pick up your cross like I was willing to do for you. And that in that, believe it or not, for those of us that have walked this path, you will find an abundant joy and a peace that surpasses all wisdom that you may have. That in losing and giving away and sacrificing our life for the sake of others, that we'll find it. That the ability to restore relationships is absolutely the greatest joy of fullness of life that you can experience. I even think of myself. I can remember times and different seasons of my life where I was completely locked in bondage and sin and horrendous decisions, to where there were people that chose to pursue me in my circumstance to restore me to God. And guess how I treated them when they pursued me and called me and chased me and met with me and sent me text messages and emails and invited me to church? Guess how I was with them? Horrendous. I was locked in fear, in shame, and guilt for my own actions and decisions. And so when they tried to bring me peace, light into my darkness, I absolutely was king persecutor to them. Didn't want to hear it. Didn't want to talk about it. In fact, not only did I not want to hear it, I just wanted to turn right back around and attack them. Who do you think you are? Oh, you have all the answers. You don't know me. You don't know my situation. All attack, right? The only thing that could set me free, man, I pushed away. I pursued to persecute to get it away because it was too hard. But that's the only thing that actually brought me freedom in life, were those that were willing to be persecuted by me because they knew that Jesus did it for them and that Jesus wanted to do it for me. And they were willing to go through it. They were willing to seek righteousness, to push through my own persecution to save me from the position that I was in. I'm ever grateful for that. I want to be that for other people. That's what it means to be the church. That's what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. That's what it means to be a minister of reconciliation, is being willing to work through persecution for the sake that you may be able to help save someone for Jesus' sake. That's good stuff. You know, think about it. I talked about this as we end here this morning. Who is like a pet lover here? Right? Yeah, I love pets. I'm just thinking dogs in particular. We watched this really cool movie the other day. Not the point. Stay on track. But those of you that love pets, maybe you experienced this with your own pets, or maybe those of you that are mindful of like pet rescues and situations. What happens in a situation to where a pet has been neglected or ignored or abused, and they find themselves in a situation, maybe they're in a home or a shelter or whatever, and there's a person, maybe you, that actually wants to bring love and help and peace to this animal, and they find themselves in a situation and you approach them to help, how do they respond? It's painful, right? They're usually not like... Some of them are, but most of them are like, come any closer and I'll attack you, right? Now, is that because they don't want help? It's because they're in a position of hurt and brokenness and fear, much like our definition, that in the moment, it's had really hard, it's hard to receive it. And so people can be the same way. That when we pursue righteousness to help, and even with the right heart and peace in mind and loving, that the best and most immediate response that we're going to get is they're just going to want to attack you. Would we know that? Would we know that persecution may come from pursuing righteousness for the sake of Jesus and the sharing of the truth in love for the gospel's sake? It's just a helpful picture for me. Now, sometimes, like Paul said in Timothy, as we end here, sometimes people are choosing evil and destruction and hatred and division in themselves, and that's true about our world all over the place, right? But I think oftentimes God will give us eyes to see the situation, to understand the motivation of a person's condition when we are trying to be restorers and being people of righteousness for his sake. The why behind it, I think, matters. So what do we do as we end here for this morning? What do we do when we're persecuted? What do we do on these journeys? What do we do when, man, people have offended and spoken illly and attacked and chased and pushed away, and whether they're right, wrong, happy, fearful, like, what do we do with that? I think Peter sums it up well in this 1 Peter chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 8, and we're going to read this and let God's word speak as we end this morning. It says, verse 8, it says, finally, all of you, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another. Be compassionate and fight for humility. Be humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. It's hard. When you're treated wrong, it's hard not to treat people wrong back. When they insult you and they speak falsely about you and they lie about you and they do things to attack you, Jesus' invitation is to not do it in return, to not repay evil for evil. Even when it seems justifiable, our God says that a person that is merciful is one that is humble and compassionate and won't fight back in that way. Furthermore, he says, on the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because this you were called so that may inherit a blessing. It's like Beatitudes, right? There's where that blessing comes from. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. They must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it. Interesting. Peacemaker. Pursue righteousness. Be meek. Be humble. It's Jesus' words all over what Peter's saying. He says, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are attentive to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who is going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Because you're living life in the way that God has intended that says what matters most. May not be easy. May not like it. You find blessing in it. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened, but in your hearts revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. When you don't fight back, when you don't speak evil for evil, when you don't quit, when you keep pushing in, when you keep showing grace, when you keep giving mercy, when you keep healthy boundaries, and you keep to the truth, that matters as well. But we do it as lovers and reconcilers. Oh my goodness, would you be ready to give the hope and the answer that you have? Because I tell you what, when I've been pursued in those situations in my life and it didn't make any sense, why are you not quitting on me? Why haven't you had enough of me? How many times did I tell you I don't want you here and I don't want to do it? Why? And somebody says, let me tell you why. Let me tell you what my Jesus did for me. It's not just something I say, it's what I'm trying to be. The one true hope for the reason why you weigh they are can change people's lives forever. Would you be ready to give an answer for that hopeful action that you do? Or not. Or run away. Don't pursue righteousness. All the things we talked about. As we end, do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of the way they talk. For it's better if it's God's will to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. Jesus' invitation in the Beatitudes is that we would be people that would trust his word and his ways to find life in abundance. A lot of those are very paradoxical, to be meek and to be humble and to be patient, to be a people that are willing to be persecuted, to hunger and thirst for righteousness, to be a people that are willing to find love and trust, to mourn the things that grieve God, that in those processes, God would actually bring us abundant life. That as we live that out and as we trust him, we actually get to bring hope and life to a world that is desperately trying to find it. Peacemakers, people that are persecuted for the kingdom's sake. That's what it means to be a Christian church. That's what it means to be a disciple and make disciples. I hope that you're compelled by the invitation of God to find life in his way and not what our world says.
We want to thank you for spending part of your day with us. Our mission at Real Life is to reach the world for Jesus one person at a time. If you'd like more info on the ministry or a giving opportunity, be sure to download the RLM app or visit us online at reallifeministries.com.